Florida and a slew of other states are making it harder to vote. But now, a new effort to reverse that. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, voting. How one activist is working to increase access to the ballot here in the Sunshine State. Give us a call as we talk elections and voting. The number to join us, 549-2937. Then later, school's out for the summer, but Read USA is making sure your kids crack a book this break. Also, how you can help support the historic east side of Jack's just by buying a beer. We'll tell you about it. First, though, here's your COVID update and a change to tell you about. Beginning this week, the state has stopped giving out daily reports of COVID-19 statistics. And their online dashboard, which has been up since last spring, is also stopping updates. So we have no choice but to follow along with that and start giving the numbers out once a week. In the meantime, please get vaccinated and encourage those around you to do the same. Well, it's a major new effort in Florida to make it easier to vote. Former State Representative Sean Shaw, who also ran for Attorney General a few years ago, is working with his organization, People Over Profits, to kick off a new initiative to increase access to the ballot. Now, this move comes just as Florida passed a controversial new law making it harder to vote. Other states have been doing the same thing, particularly Georgia, just to our north. And President Trump continues to spread false claims about the integrity of the 2020 election. These new laws are based on lies that the president told about the election. So what will these ballot initiatives do? Well, Sean Shaw is on the line with details. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Great. Thanks for joining us. And as we talk about voting and access to the ballot in Florida, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Well, Sean Shaw, you are a former state rep, 2018 Democratic candidate for Attorney General. You have an organization, People Over Profits, and you're trying to get not just one, not just two, but three state constitutional amendments in Florida passed next year that would make it easier for people to vote. Now, before we get into the details of these amendments, it's hard enough these days to get one amendment on the ballot. The legislature has made it very difficult for that to happen. And you want to do three. This is an ambitious goal that you've set out for yourself.
Well, I'd go big or go home, right? But it is these amendments concern probably the most important component of our democracy, and that's the ability of people to vote. And so if you're going to be ambitious in any area, this is it. It's not just my organization and myself. The ACLU of Florida is heavily involved in this. The Florida Alliance is heavily involved, and a lot of other partners. But no doubt, this is going to be hard. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be just require a lot of grassroots support. But in Florida, the people have shown that they are willing and responsive to constitutional amendments about certain issues here that are important, whether it's minimum wage, whether it's medicinal cannabis, whether it's public education, whether it's, restoring the rights of our returning brothers and sisters. The people of Florida are willing to vote for good things. And so we hope that will continue. And you're right. The legislature continues to throw up roadblocks and make it harder to get these amendments on. And so that's why we want to do it now rather than to wait another legislative session and see what other roadblock they might throw up. So we're going to do it now, but it's not going to be easy, but a democracy is worth it.
It's 549-2937. These efforts could cost as much as $20 million, all three of them together. Let's talk about these proposals. You want to automatically register any Florida resident to vote who is renewing or updating their driver's license. That's seems like common sense, motor voter type of thing. You want to allow Florida residents to register to vote on election day or during early voting, same day registration. And you want to undo a provision passed by the legislature in 2019 that required former felons hoping to vote to first pay off any fines, fees, and restitution. And so, of course, the voters did overwhelmingly approve Amendment 4, which would restore voting rights in the state to previously incarcerated people. But then the legislature nullified their wishes by throwing up a barrier requiring them to pay off a lot of fines and fees, many of which they can't afford to pay. Okay, so let's begin with these one by one. Motor voter legislation. Other states do that.
Yeah, none of these proposals are particularly earth-shattering, or they're certainly not partisan. Taken together, they will add over a million new voters to the rolls. So these are, I think, common sense and easy. I think these are easy calls. The first one, as you said, requires when you interact with the division, the Department of Motor Vehicles, renewing, getting a new license, changing your address, updating your address, anything like that, you would be automatically registered to vote. The current law is that you have to opt in and affirmatively say, I want to do this, and then they send you to another website where you register to vote. If this amendment were to pass, you would be automatically registered unless you affirmatively opted out. So that is the difference that this amendment proposed.
Mm-hmm. And then same-day registration, you also say, yeah, people should be able to register to vote during the early voting period. Nearly half the states offer some form of same-day registration. This is a piece of voting reform that's become increasingly popular all over the country, along with ranked choice voting, which is catching on in some other states, although not here. What would you say to critics of this piece of your proposal who say it could affect election security?
That's kind of just a red flag that I know is going to be thrown up to all three of these amendments, that this is, you know, it's the same justification that they're using to pass these voter oppression laws around the country, whether it's the attempts in Texas, they actually passed in Georgia and here in Florida, but that's kind of it rings hollow because there is no big instances of these kind of things affecting the integrity. And in this instance, if you go to register on election day, they will take your information. You will be registered. I believe your ballot will be, I'm thinking of the word, it's early in the morning, sorry, but it'll be provisional. And then once they are able to make sure that you are who you say you are and your ID and everything else checks out, your vote will be counted. That's not earth-shattering. Again, these are things that other states do. If all three of these pass, Florida would not be some sort of outlier in terms of what we allow. We would be right in the middle with what other states do around the country. These are not earth-shattering amendments. I keep saying that. These are common sense things that other states do around the country.
We'll go to your calls in a moment for Sean Shaw and his group People Over Profits. He's working to get three state constitutional amendments on the ballot next year that would make it easier to vote in Florida. It's getting harder all the time, and we're not alone. Lots of states making these moves. Go to the phones, 549-2937. So you're trying to ease access to the ballot, and of course, this effort on your part comes amid continued false claims about widespread fraud in the 2020 election. Former President Trump continues to falsely claim he won the election, and that has sparked laws in dozens of states, including Florida. Bills that are becoming laws, I should say, restricting efforts to the ballot, efforts that we saw work really well in 2020, like voting by mail, ballot drop boxes. These were very popular in the pandemic, of course. Florida's election bill, which the governor signed last month, is being challenged in federal court by voting rights groups. At the same time, Sean Shaw in Congress, the For the People Act is a sweeping federal effort to enact voting reforms across the country. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia over the weekend, who is a key swing vote on this legislation, said he won't support the For the People Act, and he will not support any effort to weaken or get rid of the filibuster, which voting and democracy advocates now say is necessary to ensure that we remain a democracy in the United States of America, because these efforts in the states are so restrictive and are designed, critics say, to institute effectively one-party rule indefinitely in their states. So your efforts, what would you say to those who've pointed out that Democrats are too little too late to this fight, that Republicans for decades have been playing a long game, really, gaining control of legislatures, taking step-by-step measures to make it harder for groups that oppose them to vote, and that this effort is too late?
I'm not sure I would disagree with you, if someone who would say that. There has been certainly a sustained and consistent effort for Republicans to take over these state legislatures and other Secretary of State jobs and Attorney General jobs around the country, and we now see how important that effort has been to them to be able to kind of remain where they are. But unfortunately, we are also, and I want to say we, I mean Democrats, we're playing into their hands too. I saw the announcement by Senator Manchin that he did not intend to vote for the act, and I just can't help but think of how hard we worked in Georgia and how hard we worked to win those two seats, to get the majority in the U.S. Senate, how much effort went into those runoffs for one senator from West Virginia to essentially neutralize all that by saying he's not voting for it. It's extremely disappointing, but I say all that to say voting rights should not be partisan. This is who right. can vote isn't partisan. Who can vote is at the heart of our democracy, and the fact that the kind of we're weaponizing these voting and who can vote and when you can vote is one of the reasons we're doing this. This is not a partisan effort. I just want more people to vote, period. I don't know what the partisan makeup of the new voters, if we do these three amendments, I don't know what it is. I don't know who it'll be. I don't know if it's more Dems or Rs or more NPAs. I don't care. I just know that more people will be able to vote. And in my opinion, that's a good thing for democracy.
Last week, in the midst of all of this discussion about voting and our democracy, more than 100 scholars issued a warning that American democracy is in danger. And they're calling for reforms. It's a statement warning that as states like Florida are implementing radical changes to election laws, and I'm quoting here, the voting procedures in many states are being transformed into political systems that no longer meet the minimum conditions for free and fair elections, and includes the prediction that our democracy is now at risk. As I mentioned, more than 100 scholars, professors of political science, government, communications, and history from across the land at some of the America's most prominent academic institutions signed this statement, and they claim that statutory changes in large key electoral battleground states are dangerously politicizing the process of electoral administration and undermining fundamental democratic principles. Florida is one of those states. And so as you put forth this effort, can we honestly say that Florida is still conducting free and fair elections?
I think we can, but I might still agree with the premise of the quote you just made. I think January 6th is exhibit A, B, and C of how at risk this democracy is. And I would also say our current reaction to it and how we view it looking back is exhibit, you know, D, E, and F. January 6th was a monumental challenge to our democracy here in the United States, and it's now being looked at in hindsight by a lot of them, I should say, as, oh, it wasn't a big deal. It was just people expressing themselves, blowing out some steam, and we don't need to really look at it. It's not a big thing. It is a big thing. If a few more legislatures around the country had been in control of Republicans versus close or versus in charge and being led by Democrats, we'd be in a way different place. I think January 6th was much closer than we like to admit, certainly looking back. We got problems here. We've got really, not only do we have problems in terms of the mechanics of voting, but we have problems in people's ability to trust government, period. And one of the reasons, I think, is because partisan intent is being ascribed to everything. And people are looking at everything that's done through the lens of kind of partisanship. And listen, I'm a big-time Democrat, but I hope that we don't look at the expansion of voting rights through that lens. I hope that we don't look at getting more people the ability to vote when they interact with the division of motor vehicles through a partisan lens, and making sure that fees and fines don't stand in the way of what 60% of the Florida voters approve. 60% of the voters in Florida, that's...
Well, that gets to what I was saying, is that there's been a long-running criticism that the legislature routinely ignores the will of the people, not just on felon voting rights, but a lot of other things.
That's why I ran for attorney general. You're exactly correct. I totally agree with that, and that's one of the reasons we've got to go to the people and not try to go through the legislature to get things changed.
We'll go to that in a moment, but first some calls for Sean Shaw of People Over Profits voting in Florida. 549-2937. Daryl in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. Go ahead.
Good morning. Well, congratulations and good luck with that. But I have the same concerns that Melissa does, and that is that we could get these constitutional amendments as we did with medical marijuana and the voter rights for felons. And the legislature, the Republican legislature, the Republican governor is going to ignore it. They're going to twist, they're going to turn, and they're going to find a way to not do what the people want, what the people voted for. I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me that now they've padded the Supreme Court to do it. I just don't. I don't see that this. I'll support it in every way, but my confidence that the Republican Party is represents democracy is gone. They do not represent a democracy. They are doing everything they can to stop the people from voting, to stop doing what the people vote for. And so I don't know where you go from that point. We are a democracy, certainly in Florida, is no longer what rules the country, what rules the state.
Thank you, Daryl. Let's talk about this, Sean. Critics do believe the legislature has become an anti-democratic, small d, democratic, counter-majoritarian extremist force. They are on the opposite side of the majority of the voters in this state on a slew of issues. And let me just add, even getting a constitutional ballot initiative is so hard now. You've got to collect nearly a million signatures. This is going to be cost you about $20 million to get all three of these measures on the ballot. And as Daryl pointed out, even when the voters get something passed, doesn't mean it's necessarily enacted in the way that the voters intended.
Melissa, I'm going to have to go in a little bit, but Daryl's right. I have the same concerns. I mean, I'm a former member of the legislature. Trust me, I hear you, man. We've tried to draft these in a way that they are not susceptible to that sort of, smoke and mirrors, but we're not, I mean, we're realistic. We understand that the Supreme Court and the legislature are hurdles that we need to get past. But I would also say we've got to keep doing things like this. We can't kind of just say, look, they're not going to do what we're voting for, so let's just stop putting forward these good amendments. We can't do that, right? We have to keep pushing forward. Even a little bit at a time to try to get to a place. Like if we didn't do Amendment 4 at all, we wouldn't have any ability for our returning citizens to pass, notwithstanding the fees and fines hurdle that the legislature put up. So I just think we got to keep doing this, even though we know the legislature is going to do what they're prone to do, and even though we know it's going to be hard, we've got to keep at this because there will come a time where I believe enough people in this state will see that we're not as conservative as our elected officials reflect. We may be a state that is, in fact, purple or even leans red, but that doesn't mean that we are as conservative as the things that are coming out of Tallahassee are. You know, I don't think Florida is as conservative as DeSantis and Ashley Moody and the legislature would have you believe.
I think the polling on a $15 minimum wage in this state, more than anything, and the support for medical marijuana, I think shows that. Where the majority of the voters are on a range of issues.
Right. We just got to, and Daryl's right, though. It's frustrating, but I just think we got to keep at it, particularly when it comes to these voting amendments.
549-2937. Elsa in St. John's County. Oop, here we go. Elsa in St. John's County. Hi, Elsa. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a Hispanic immigrant, and to me, the Constitution is like a holy thing. Much of what's happened with our democracy is very disconcerting, but Melissa, I've always liked your show, but the way you couch questions is also not fair. It would be nicer or better for to educate us, because I'm very interested in what are all the laws that have been passed that make it more difficult to vote. I've seen elections in Leon County once that was a total disaster, and that's a scary thing to us. We need to make sure that our elections, however, are secure and that only legal immigrants are allowed to vote, people who are citizens. And so there is a balance between making sure, and I would always support, you know, making sure that people can vote, but it's got to be controlled so that we know that the person voting is voting legally.
All right, Elsa, thank you. And I appreciate you listening, and I appreciate your feedback. I would respectfully disagree with you that my questions aren't fair, because the legislation that was pushed through this most recent cycle and signed into law was based on a lie. There was no widespread voter fraud in Florida or in any other state in 2020. Elections officials, including all of the supervisors of elections across this state, opposed this legislation. They ran a secure and fair election. So this law was a solution in search of a problem, quite frankly. And the particulars of the law do make it harder for certain groups of voters to cast a ballot. Sean Shaw, can you explain what the new law does and why it makes access to the ballot more difficult?
Well, one of the big things is, you know, obviously if you're trying to vote by mail, this requires you to, you know, update your signature and update your request to vote by mail at a much more frequent interval. It does some things with regard to drop box locations and your ability to, it just makes it, it throws up hoops in your ability to vote. And Melissa is not, or the caller, sorry, is not, she's not wrong. There is a balance. Obviously, you want to make sure elections are secure. But what I would say is there's no evidence that here in Florida in particular that they're not secure. They are very secure. In fact, Florida runs some of the most efficient elections in the country. In fact, there's a reason why when we have these presidential elections, you know the results in Florida much faster than you know any other big state, because we kind of do it well here.
Because we used to do it so badly.
And as you explained,
they put through a lot of reforms after 2000 so that we could actually do it right. Yeah.
Bingo. And so we're just trying to make it so that more people can participate in democracy. That's it. And Melissa, I'm going to have to go in a little bit. I apologize.
Thank you for that. The website is thepeopleoverprofits.org. Sean Shaw of People Over Profits, thank you for your time.
No, of course. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me, and thank your caller.
Much more still ahead later in the hour, why a new study at UNF aims to prove a connection between a happy gut and the health of your heart. But up next.
Every student in elementary schools in Duval County are choosing three books of their liking and taking them to add to their personal home libraries.
Spotlighting the work of Read USA this summer break, getting your kids to crack a book. That's next. Well, school is out for the summer, but the local nonprofit Read USA is busier than ever. I spoke about it with CEO Terrence Freeman. He wants to make sure your kids crack a book this summer. He also serves on the Jacksonville City Council. Take a listen. Hi, Terrence. Good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
So you're the CEO of Read USA, in addition to your work serving on the Jacksonville City Council. Here we are heading into summer break, but there's a lot going on with this organization. Tell us what's on the agenda for Read USA this summer.
Well, definitely exciting times. And today, this week, we're finishing up with our big event, which is our book fairs, where every student in elementary schools in Duval County are choosing three books of their liking and taking them to add to their personal home libraries. Really with the efforts of really trying to reduce that summer slide that takes place for a lot of students over the course of a summer. So giving them an opportunity to get the books on top of resources that will help them track what they're reading and better help them get through some of the challenges they may face reading, not only for themselves but for their parents, is something that's exciting for us.
Yeah, that summer slide is real, so parents definitely need to take advantage of what you're doing. You're working with teens on this, too. Tell us about the teen tutoring aspect of Read USA's efforts with kids and literacy.
Yes, I'm really, really excited about our peer-to-peer mentoring program and partnering with the city, the Mayor's Youth at Works program, and Goodwill. We are taking on, we're asking for 100 teens. And what's so unique about it is these teens will be paired with an elementary student that is going through a five-week intensive reading program. And over the course of that period, we'll have certified teachers facilitating it and partnering with a professor from JU who will do the pre and post assessment. And the value from this is two things. One, at the end of last year's program, the data revealed that both the elementary student and the teen student experienced gains in reading. But beyond that, you have an opportunity now where there's a struggling elementary student that has a teen to look up to become his role model. And you have a teen who may have some challenges reading as well that now feels that confidence of this young elementary student looks up to me. And then on top of that, we are teaching these teens the soft skills that they need to when they really go out and enter the workforce, they're going to be equipped and prepared to do so on top of making a couple extra dollars in the summer to help them when they're buying their school clothes and things that they need for the next school year coming up.
Very cool. Speaking of dollars, you've got a fundraiser coming up at the Alhambra Theater's Seussical the Musical. Tell us about that.
We're very fortunate to have some strong supporters in the Beaches Rotaract, and they're putting this event on for us, and it's going to be a great event. We're going to have students coming back and giving testimonials. There'll be a silent auction there, and it's just a great opportunity for us to continue to share the good things that we're doing with Reed and the partnerships that we have with various organizations like Beaches Rotaract to help us share that good news. So we're really excited about it and looking forward to a great event.
Very nice. People need to check that out. Let me also take a moment to talk to you about the leadership at the Jacksonville City Council. It's a first for this city. You and Sam Newby, both now in leadership roles on the council, the first time this body has been led by an African-American slate of members. So if you could talk to me a little bit about what this means for you guys personally, but also for Duval County.
Well, one, I think that it's a testament to the work that our council is doing. We are really focusing on trying to meet the needs of every citizen and every resident in our county, especially coming off of some tough times like the pandemic. When it comes to leadership, one, I'm honored. I am honored that my colleagues thought enough of me to elect me to this position. But I'm the vice president. Sam Newby is the president, and my role as the vice president is to really stand by his side and ensure that the things that are most important to him and working with all of us, that they get done. Now, the moment is a big moment for our city. It is a first that's been brought to my attention, and I don't think it'll be the last. I mean, Jacksonville, We are the bold city of the South. I like to say that, you know, we are a great city on the rise, and this is just yet another example of, even through some of the challenges that we're facing and many other communities are facing, we're able to look beyond those challenges and continue to make sure that Jacksonville is going to be the best city for people to choose to work, live, and play.
And let's get back quickly to Read USA. How can people support your efforts?
Well, they can visit us at readusainc.com. On our website, they'll learn all about our history, how we began, the programs that we're offering. We have a big event coming up, Peace in the Pages, on October 1st as well. That is our major event held at the stadium, the Jaguar Stadium. Really want to thank my angel investors that it's because of their donations that I'm able to be in this position as the first CEO. And that's Dolores Parr Weaver Foundation, the Ward family, the Edelmans, the Bakers. Really grateful for them and really asking those who love our city and love our kids. Literacy is a component that if we can bear down and focus on it, I promise you we're going to address a lot of these issues that are impacting our community negatively.
All right. Thank you so much. He's Terrence Freeman, CEO of Read USA and Vice President of the Jacksonville City Council this year. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a great night.
Well, a new study at UNF thinks a happier gut means a healthier heart. You might not have made this connection, but UNF is looking at new research investigating the effects of fermented vegetables on your microbiome and your heart health. What's this all about? Well, Dr. Andrea Arakawa is professor of nutrition and dietetics, and she's on the line. Dr. Arakawa, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we've known for a long time that our gut is like a second brain and that our digestive tract, the health of it, is so important to our overall health. Can you talk, before we get into your study, can you first talk a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So there has been a dramatic increase in interest in the gut bacteria and their function in the body. And this has been largely driven by the rapid improvement and the wide availability of techniques to analyze the gut microbiome. So before, we couldn't really look at these microorganisms because we did not have the techniques available. Now that we do, we see this enormous amount of research that shows that the gut bacteria are connected with pretty much any disorder you can think of, you know, obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes. There have been even some studies connecting it with autism spectrum disorder.
Wow. I you know, I take a probiotic just about every day to try to do what I can to keep this part of me healthy, especially in the pandemic. But your study is looking at something very particular. Tell us what you're looking at.
Yeah. So we, you know, so we are pretty much trying to provide probiotics to our participants. However, we are trying to do this in the form of food. So, you know, as a dietitian, we I think my colleagues would agree that we try to promote foods rather than supplements. So what we are trying to do with this study is see if people can consume fermented vegetables, and the dose that we're giving is about 100 grams a day, which is a little less than half a cup, and for a longer period of time. And we're trying to see if that can change the composition of the bacteria in their gut and also change the markers of inflammation in their blood.
What are you talking about? Kimchi? Korean kimchi,
so, yes,
that kind of thing?
Actually, kimchi, yeah, yeah. So we're actually providing a variety of different fermented cabbages, and kimchi is a Napa cabbage, so they're all in the cabbage family. So we actually have a few different flavors of kimchi and sauerkraut, and people can pretty much pick if they get randomized into that group. We also have a control group, which is very important in these trials because we do need a comparison group.
What is it about fermentation that is so good for us?
Well, you know, fermentation is not something that just happened yesterday, right? It's been around for a long
period
of time. Yeah,
thousands of years, yeah.
That's right, 10,000 years, you know. And, you know, originally this was done as a way to preserve food. You know, nowadays it's still done, you know, to preserve foods, but there are other ways that people, you know, people do pickling, which is mostly adding vinegar most commonly, and those have nothing to do with this type of fermentation that we're talking about here, because these are produced by bacteria that make lactic acid. So we like to use these foods that have that lactic acid, which really provides that acidity to the foods, but also helps preserve the food, helps it last longer. And there are a lot of other byproducts of these bacteria that supposedly are good for your health. But we don't really know, because there are not a lot of studies out there about this. So that's why I am trying to study the role of these fermented vegetables, you know, for a longer period of time. So we're asking people to consume these for 8 weeks.
8 weeks, and you're recruiting participants. You want volunteers to eat all this stuff. What would you say to people who don't like kimchi? They're not necessarily enticed by this idea.
Yes, and I think there are plenty of people out there. And, you know, but I would say it's an acquired taste. You know, it's something that you may not like it when you try first, but then, you know, you might like it later. And it makes a big difference if you consume it by itself or if you consume it with other foods. I think it's really good as a garnish, as something that you add to you know, a meal. So it's really a side dish that can give a lot more, I don't know, it can just like provide some extra flavor to your meal.
Did you grow
I love to eat it with rice and beans.
Did you grow up with it?
Well, you know, I'm half Japanese, so I actually grew up with different fermented products, but I did not grow up with kimchi because it's Korean food.
Yeah.
But I've been making that at home, and I have to say I absolutely love it.
Now, what's interesting to me about this is that you're specifically looking at the heart and how a healthy digestive tract promotes heart health. What made you zero in on the heart?
Well, you know, it turns out that certain bacteria in the gut can take some amino acids that we consume in our diet. So amino acids are, you know, the small compounds found in proteins. And they can take these amino acids, convert them into this compound called trimethylamine. And this compound can go to our liver and be converted to another one called trimethylamine oxide. And this alone has been shown to be a potent agent that can damage your blood vessel and cause atherosclerosis. And that's, you know, the connection with the heart. And there are a lot of microorganisms also that can produce inflammatory compounds. And inflammation is also something that is closely connected with cardiovascular disease. So that's why we are trying to see if these fermented vegetables can decrease the some of these bacteria that can produce these inflammatory markers. And, you know, this is something very unique that there has been no study in the U.S. A lot of the studies have been done in Korea and in Japan because that their population consumes more fermented vegetables. But we are trying to see if this actually is also healthy here in the United States and see if people can get used to consuming fermented vegetables on a regular basis.
In a moment, we'll explain how people can volunteer to join the study. But first, can you talk a little bit about how those populations have benefited over many hundreds and thousands of years from eating this way? They live longer. They tend to be healthier. They tend to have less obesity, less heart disease, less cancer.
That's completely right. You know, so from the studies that are out there right now, specifically with fermented vegetables, we can see that there is there are some benefits towards decreasing blood pressure, also body weight. You know, people can maintain a normal body weight by consumption of these vegetables. And I think largely, you know, it may not be just connected with the live bacteria and the vegetables themselves, but because if they're consuming more of these vegetables, they're probably not consuming as much of other foods that could help with increase in body weight. So then you also see a decrease in blood glucose, so that it has potential for, you know, treating diabetes. So you see a lot of these benefits in the Asian population. And, you know, my hope is that we can maybe pick up a little bit of that culture, a little bit of those food habits to improve the health of our population here in the West.
Is there any other kind of fermented vegetable we can have besides cabbage, doctor? No offense, but I'm not a big fan of kimchi or sauerkraut.
Yes, you know, and you know, I am with you in that they have a very specific flavor, and you know, not everyone really likes the acidity. But I'll tell you why I really love these, because you know, the cabbages, they are not just probiotics. You know, they don't only contain the live bacteria, but they also are what we call prebiotics. So they contain the food for the bacteria in your gut. So they're two in one. It's what we call a symbiotic. And that's why, you know, I like the fermented vegetables so much. But yes, there is, we have yogurt. You know, yogurt is probably the most popular food out there, but unfortunately, not all yogurts are the same. You know, some of them, some brands and some, it's really hard to tell how much of the live bacteria is really present in a yogurt. Some have a seal that actually tells you that product did have live cultures at the time of manufacture, but you were never, you know, sure about those. But they are another source. So dairy, there are a lot of dairy fermented milks, kefirs. They all have live bacteria.
Yeah.
And also, you know, not just the cabbages, there are all the vegetables that can have the live bacteria, like cucumbers.
Sure. With all of that said, how can people be part of your study?
So we have a study website, and our website is www.happygut.domains.uns.edu. And I know it's a little long, but, you know, people can also email us at happygut@uns.edu, and we'll go from there. We can send the link to a website to everyone who might be interested. We're interested in people between the ages of 35 and 64 who have at least one risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
So get in touch with her, Dr. Andrea Arakawa, Professor of Nutrition and Dietetics at UNF. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
And in a moment, have a brew. Support the historic East Side. We'll tell you how. That's next.
Cindy Tomasetti of Engel & Volkers, offering full-time assistance to real estate buyers and sellers with white glove service. Video tours and remote transactions available. Info at NortheastFloridaRealtor.com.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at VickersLanding.com.
Born in 1876, Eartha White was a philanthropist, activist, and humanitarian in Jacksonville. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Tim Gilmore, author of In Search of Eartha White, Storehouse for the People. We'll discuss gentrification in Winter Park's Hannibal Square neighborhood. That and more on Florida Frontiers Monday evening at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, actress, singer, and dancer Rita Moreno. She won an Oscar for her performance as Anita in West Side Story, was an original cast member of the Elektra Company, and played a nun and prison psychologist on Oz. A new documentary about her is very revealing about the ethnic stereotyping and sexual harassment she dealt with in Hollywood. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Back in January, President Biden appointed a COVID-19 task force to spearhead the country's vaccination effort. Now it's been 6 months, and more than half of all American adults are fully vaccinated. We check back in with members of that task force and ask about progress, pitfalls, and lessons learned on the path to herd immunity. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, our downtown neighbors at Intuition Ale Works have a great idea. Have a beer, support a historic neighborhood. They've got a new lager brewing up called Out East, and they're making this in partnership with the Historic Eastside Community Development Corp. This Out East brew will be available exclusively on draft in the Intuition Tap Room starting on June 8th, and $1 from every pint sold will go to the CDC. Ben Davis, founder and owner of Intuition Ale Works, is on the line. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how are you?
Good to have you. And Suzanne Pickett, president and CEO of the Historic Eastside Community Development Corp. Hey, Suzanne.
Happy Monday, Melissa. And
yeah, happy Monday to you. In a moment, we'll hear all about the work of your Historic Eastside CDC. But first, Ben, tell us about Out East and how you dream this new lager up.
I mean, we're big fans of lagers at Intuition, sometimes an overlooked style in the craft beer world. And we've just been working on one for a couple months. And when this kind of whole thing took place, as far as as an opportunity to raise some funds for a great organization, it was a no-brainer to do a style that would do well this summer and then also in the fall. So that's kind of why we went with it.
And this will be released to the public starting tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It's a light lager, perfect for summer. And as I said, $1 from every pint sold will be donated to your organization, Suzanne. How will this help the Historic East Side?
Well, this is great, Melissa. The Historic East Side CDC was developed to act as a liaison and resource for the transformation and preservation of the East Side neighborhood. So this really great conscious partnership will go a long way in assisting us in that initiative.
How will the money be used? What are some of the biggest needs in the neighborhood?
A lot of some of the biggest needs in the community are, of course, support for our businesses on our main street, our main corridor along A. Philip Randolph Boulevard. Most people are not aware that there are still 11 businesses along that corridor. Also, we have a community wellness program where we are working to assist seniors in home repair. We are working on food insecurity with a grocery store, providing just general essential services for our community. So there are several initiatives that this will help.
Such great news. And Ben, let's give a moment to shout out how Intuition Ale Works is being, you're being a good community partner. Microbreweries are engines of economic development all over the country, and you're playing that role in Jacksonville.
Yeah, we try. I mean, I think the last year was pretty tough, 2020, for everybody, and I think especially a lot of nonprofits. So one, to give us an opportunity to do something to help, our neighborhood is obviously awesome.
Absolutely. And, Out East is a cool name, too, Suzanne. That's sort of a nickname that the East Side has had for decades, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's an endearing term that's been used by generations of families. And we're so excited about the marketing of Out East and also the trademarking of this term.
So this is a trademarked name, Out East Lager. Brewed specifically for the Historic East Side. Ben, you want to invite everyone to come down to Intuition this afternoon? Is that right?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow afternoon. Thank you. Tell us What's on tap, literally and figuratively?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Out East Lager, and that's, you know, maybe that's really about it. It was just our tap room, be kind of normal operations. We'll have our kitchen going and hopefully have a good crowd there. And actually, you know, there is a jumbo shrimp game, too, so you could come in and have a couple beers before you go there.
Oh, that's perfect. So come on down to Intuition tomorrow, starting at 3 o'clock, and order Out East Lager. As we've been hearing, a dollar from every pint sold will be donated to the historic Eastside CDC. If you've ever been in the sports complex for a ball game, baseball, football, you name it, you're right near this historic neighborhood, which many people have never driven through. But this is a great effort, and it will really make a difference. So I want to thank you both so much. Ben Davis, founder and owner at Intuition Ale Works, and Suzanne Pickett, president and CEO of the historic Eastside CDC. Thanks so much, and have fun with it this week.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
And cheers to Out East Lager. And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. She always likes a good lager. So does director Josh Torres. Our editorial director is Jessica Palumbo, and our digital editor here at WJCT News is Bill Bortsfield. Now, if you missed any part of today's show, catch our podcast. It's up later today, wherever you like to listen. You can also download the WJCT app and listen right through the app. By the way, keep those emails coming. We really value your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News, 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.